were strong in the bowl, who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last one.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy. And we should just say from the outset that we've had a few technical troubles, so we apologise if everything's not quite the smooth, well-oiled professional machine that you're used to from Richmond Tiger Talk.
Yep. But, and look, I think that's a very good metaphor for the Richmond Football Club this week, Andy, because I think it's fair to say that things didn't go exactly as planned on Sunday. I doubt if in Dimmer's notes he had have star full forward knocked out within the first 5 minutes, lose key running defender before the end of the first quarter, and yet the result was still pleasing.
Yeah, it's sort of like a movie or a TV show where you know the good guys are going to win at the end, but they need to suffer a bit beforehand. And there needs to be some sort of suspension of disbelief that you're going to lose. And that all happened. Actually, this, in many ways, I thought was the most impressive win of the year. And we've had 8 of them. Because
The Melbourne wins stacks up. It's taking up pretty well.
Okay, fair enough. But the sort of... There's a very simplistic... The media hate talking honestly about the effect of injuries because they get so much flack from the winning team supporters about you're not giving enough credit. But look, bottom line is there are different kinds of injuries, and losing the key full forward, especially when you don't really have a proper backup, Kelvin Moore, and one of your key backline distributors, in the first quarter, when that means that everyone else doesn't get any rest and has to do the rotations all game, you should be done by that point. You know, it's Richmond, when we beat Melbourne last year, it was a great win. We all enjoyed it. But the reality is they lost a few key players by injury. So there was a big asterisk next to the win. That would have been, had we lost this game, it would have been eminently forgivable. But Nick, not only did we not lose it, it wasn't even that close. You know, if we hadn't got shafted by the goal umpire, the score review.
Oh my God, Dimmer.
I thought he was quite restrained in his comments. Like, you know, we won by 5 goals. Look, it was, that to me was an eminently impressive performance. One of the games I enjoyed the most.
The data on it is the losing a player in the first quarter is about, and I haven't seen this updated, this was a couple of years ago, but it's about equivalent to giving up a couple of goals. And and St Kilda had, and we think St Kilda had an injury as well. Brandon White missed 2 of the middle quarters. He actually came back in the last quarter. There is a slight chance that Alan Richardson actually forgot who Brandon White was and thought he was a Make-A-Wish kid. But no, he is legitimately a St Kilda footballer.
Yes. Important points. But yeah, look, great win. And look, at the end of the day, that we said in the preview that they're crap. And they are.
They kicked, I think it was their best kicking game for the year in terms of shots on goal, annoyingly enough.
Yeah, and they got a lot of troubles, but you're still going to beat them, and they are capable of beating a team. They will roll a top 8 team later in the year, and it wasn't us.
At some stage.
And we got a workman like win, and a lot of guys were quite impressive in it.
So, I've spoken before about my adventures in field umpiring, and one of the trickiest things you have to manage is competitions that have got a send-off rule, because it's a really big deal and there's not really a culture of it. So everyone, if you do it, everyone has got to understand why you've done it. It can't be something line ball. Otherwise, you'll have one team just going berserk. And so the only game I've been involved in where it happened, where somebody literally kicked somebody in the face. So there was, nobody argued about it. But long story short, I thought the umpire mishandled the Carlisle situation by not marching him back 50 metres, just to highlight, you know, yeah, you really stuffed up this time. But yeah, I would have sent him off. I know it wasn't deliberate, but it was just so crude and, yeah.
Nick, my take on that, and by the way, thank you for filling, I think you are the only person who's umpired at any reasonable length who's on any AFL podcast, fan or official. So you're filling a valuable niche in the market there of someone with actual umpiring experience that has been crying out. But I'm taking the piss, obviously. But I would say my take on that situation was the umpires are so used to Jack's staging, and if you from one angle, it didn't look bad. And I reckon
the only other piece of genuine insight I can offer is that most of the time they make mistakes either because the rules are really confusing, they've got a bad angle on play, or they've been coached up to look for something and they're not using their common sense, because most of the time they do a really good job and they are. The elite umpires are really good, but you see in round one with the 50-meter rule, where they've been told to enforce it really strictly by the AFL, and it just looks like a disaster when it happens in practice, and everyone agrees that let's not do that again.
I reckon they've got round, they've talked, and they've decided that Jack's a bit of a smart ass and a bit of a stager, and they don't trust him,
and he gets nothing. Yeah,
I think he's systemically discriminated against by the AFL umpires, and you never raise in the press conference. You don't call these things out publicly, but I think the club needs to do something about it. Like the treatment he gets, like it's not getting the Tiki Touchwoods free kicks that he doesn't or he doesn't get, but like sometimes he does occasionally get absolutely monstered in marking contests, and they don't call it, and that was. To not give 50 then, like the only, his knees buckled. The only way you wouldn't get that.
You just gotta.
Like, it is because you don't trust him, is that you think, oh, well, if any other player, if a normal, you know, Jack Graham, if that happened to Jack Graham, he gets the 50.
You've got to do it to maintain control of the situation. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It was.
Anyway, my reaction was outraged tinfoil hat wearing. But, the upside was, Nick, that
Didn't trade a top 10 draft pick for Jake Carlisle.
Yeah, he has been playing all right for them, as much as a nutcase, a white powder snorting nutcase. We got a really good look at Moore.
Yeah, we were chatting offline before the game, I think I use the phrase that he's got big strengths and weaknesses, and I think we got to see the full range of it. He's really fast, and he's vertical leap wise, he would be a slightly below average NBA player. Like he has got genuine vertical explosive ability, and that's kind of useful, particularly when we need to bring the ball to the ground. You could tell when he put his mind to it and really jumped at the ball, like he was jumping over the tops of packs and bringing it down front and centre, which was really useful. Sometimes he didn't read the play well. Sometimes he didn't present. He kind of lost confidence in his kicking after the first shot at goal, and ended up, you know, every time he'd take a mark on the lead, which was a pleasing number of times, doing little dinky handballs off, which is fine. I actually thought it sort of straightened us out a bit, playing that leading centre-half forward role.
I agree. He was quite conventional. Like the big thing you lose is Jack's brains. And Jack's
and on-the-ground ability, which is stunning.
That is true. But Jack finds the holes in the defence and he does the clever little side leads. But Moore was playing a much more conventional or traditional key forwards role. He was running in straight lines, trying to burn his opponent off with pace, which Jack can't do. Jack has to outthink his opponent. And because of that, he got to some very conventional spots. It did mean that he wasn't always in the right spot, as you point out. But overall, it was very workmanlike, I thought.
Yeah, we didn't ruck him, which was a slight disappointment. I would have quite liked to see that.
And there were actually times when we would ruck a mid like Caddy or Martin, and Moore was actually around, which seems slightly odd because, you know, Moore's not going to do anything when the ball's on the ground and around the ruck contest. You know, why not sacrifice him in that role? But, you know,
well, especially
we clearly had a plan.
He's done it before. Actually, I was mildly intrigued. You mentioned Dusty. I did that when he monstered Tom Hickey on stage. I was like, oh, God, he's strong.
Yeah, he can't be. Like, Dustin, and there was the, it's been pointed out on Twitter, it's got a lot of likes, but the double stiff arm, Dusty is just the most incredibly strong player. That double stiff arm, it's one thing to put one stiff arm, but you know, anyone who's done a stiff arm in a game knows that once you've done that one, your weight is back and it's very hard to deliver the next one. But
yeah,
somehow.
You don't have forward momentum. Yeah.
But somehow he just did a bang bang twice. It's just like, the guy is just, like how he doesn't bench press a house, like he's not that good with weights, but he's just the most incredibly naturally strong guy. We digress. Back to Moore. Mm. I just thought it was eminently workmanlike performance, quite credible. His numbers were all decent. And you could see the one thing he didn't have was enough tackles. But get that forward pressure right, he will play second forward to Jack.
Yeah, I thought his pressure was okay. Townsend had a fantastic game in the VFL. Actually, as did Marby or Charles. So there's a lot of competition for the spot. But yeah, I'd certainly... if you were the two guys who came into the team for the first time this year were Menadue and Moore, and yeah, fair to say Moore acquitted himself better, I thought.
Yeah, let's come back to Menadue, but while we're on the key forwards, the guy who actually really stepped in and became the key forward.
Oh, baby.
Oh, my God, he was good. Josh Caddy, I mean... Look, I mean, not only the sort of the three or four crucial contestant marks that lead to goals, but he took extra ones around the mark, 13 contested possessions overall, obviously the six goals, but, you know, seven tackles, 12 score involvements overall,
clearances.
Yeah, like good pinch hitting in six goals as well as good pinch hitting in the midfield. Oh my God, that was a supreme performance.
Yeah, so on AFL ratings, he's literally the most improved player in the league this year.
Mm.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
In fairness, he was quite good in 16 and 15. The AFL ratings like him. He just had a down year. His year last year was not as good as his...
Yeah, he was a bit off. Yeah,
but, I mean, it's sort of so funny that this guy... He came to play more midfield because he's in the perfect role for him.
I haven't seen the stats on centre clearance wins, but I think his proportion of he's really effective in there as well this year.
He could be. To my eye test, I think he's a pitch hitting mid, but him as a sort of a mid size lead up forward, someone who comes in and take the. Contestant mark, someone now is kicking well for goal. That's where I love him. I don't see him. If you took away his forward game, I think he's not a full time. He's not a legit full time mid. But yeah, like he's incredibly valuable in the role he's playing.
Yeah, Dan Butler at the end of the first quarter was on his way to a massive career high.
He was frustrating in that first quarter though. It was a very frustrating game. He could have had five goals for the game.
Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah, what was it?
But he is a special talent. That speed does create problems.
I know. We missed Castagna. Like, I thought without without Castagno and Grimes, that was a little bit of speed lost at either end of the ground, which was a shame.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, Dan Butler went at 35% disposal effectiveness.
Mm.
Like, you know, he had a season high three goals, did lots of good things, but
yeah, should have had two or three more.
Yeah, and did burn some ball.
Mm, I know. Well, there was a bit of that going around.
But before we get to Rhys Conker, since we're on the forwards,
let's transition.
I thought Jack Higgins, like, statistically, there was nothing special about his game, and he didn't kick any goals.
He did kick a goal from about, I thought it was about 3 metres outside of his effective range, so I was quite impressed by that.
Do you mean the one that was not allowed?
Well, the one that was actually a goal that wasn't scored as such, but yeah, he got good length on that kick. I was quite impressed.
He did. The thing that I liked, and there's nothing on the stat sheet in the 15 touches and everything else that he got that stands out, but I thought he was running to the right spot. Like, he was starting to get the game plan.
Mm.
You know, he was getting on the end of those fast break possessions and, you know, burning off his man that the other more experienced players in the team do. So I was sort of thinking,
yeah,
I was starting to see Higgins, more as part of the team than he has before.
Yeah, and in a team where our rotations were desperately compromised, that he was able to run through midfield reasonably competently. Like, I would have been really happy to see Stengel get a game, but actually, he probably can't do that yet, stamina-wise.
I thought we got slightly lucky with the... I was complaining last week that we had too many utility players and not enough rapiers, like not enough people who are good at one position. And then through various selection shenanigans, Brando played on the weekend. And Brando is the very opposite of a rapier. But if you're down to 20 men, this is counterintuitive, but right now I think Brandon Ellis is not in our best 22 players. But if you're only playing with 20 players, he's one of the guys you want because he's got a massive tank and he can play position without needing a lot of rotation. And he can adequately fill in a few different spots across the back line and the wing. So sort of having Brando in there, if you knew you were going to play with only 20 players, you definitely want Brando, and you probably want Rhys Conker too.
Well, and Higgins. Higgins was top three in the 3K time trial in preseason. He's got a pretty big tank.
As does Manigou. He played quite a lot of game time, so I think we actually by hook, mainly by crook, but we actually wound up with quite a good team to deal with playing by 20.
Yeah, it was interesting. We did of all the injuries, I thought. I mean, we clearly missed Jack, but Caddy filled in really well. We really missed Dylan Grimes. Do you know how many people Gresham matched up with? These are only the ones I counted.
I think I got four.
I got six.
Wow, that's
crazy. I mean, look, one of them was when he outmarked Dave Asprey, so that probably doesn't count. But I legitimately had Short, Manigou, Brando, Conker and K-Mac standing next to him at a centre bounce at various stages.
Interesting.
Ugh.
Just since you mentioned K-Mac, aside from that one brilliant moment, it was one of the best things I've seen.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, where I think he beat a 4-on-1. Thanks, Rhys Conker, for the kick. But the two guys that the coaching staff, despite being lower numbers, the only two, almost all our players had really high time on game numbers. The only guys that they didn't quite know how to play were K-Mac and Conker.
Yeah, I actually went back and I checked, and that's a pretty consistent thing for K-Mac, so I do wonder if his sort of instructions are just to go super hard. But yeah, it's also normally sort of who the guys that aren't quite fitting in the most. The time on ground stats are off the charts. Like, normally we have four guys play more than 90% game time, key defenders, key forwards, and we had more than half the team play more than 90% game time. Everyone played around, 12 minutes more than they normally do. And that even K-Mac, who is often in the 60s, 60% game time.
Like, yeah, exactly. Really,
yeah.
It was really only Conker whose numbers, 74, mm. he's been playing maybe a bit high 70s. But just I want to talk about Sean Grid since we're talking about numbers. So running mid, played 92% of the time, which is a long time for a player of his type. So really had to crack in. Had 22, not a big deal, but 13 contested possessions. Like, that's a lot of hard grafting.
Seven intercept possessions.
Yep. Very high.
That's quite a few.
Second highest pressure point, or third highest pressure points on the team. We hadn't realised, but went into the show last week that it was his 200th game coming up. And if you know the show long term, you know we're fans of Sean Grigg. Like,
Look, in our defence, we probably didn't acknowledge the 200 games because we don't count the Carlton ones.
Yeah, and we probably never will. But, you know, in a career that's defined by above average adequateness, that was a very tough workmanlike performance that, once again, well, you know, the commentators wouldn't have talked about it afterwards, but was a contributing factor, genuinely contributing factor to our win.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of contributing factors to the win, I think even better than above average, Jaden Short.
Yeah, that was funny. I'm not a big fan of Eddie's commentary often, but he called Jaden Short till about late in the second quarter the best player on the ground. And if you watch it, I was watching the replay, Eddie was right. Like, not necessarily the best player on the ground, but everything Jaden did, it wasn't mind-blowing, but he didn't make a mistake. He was perfect with the football. Like, not only was he going at 100%, it was a good 100%. They weren't mind-blowing kicks, but they were kicks to the centre, kicks that set up the next bit of play. He's a very classy young man.
Yeah, and he's got better, because we talked earlier in the year, there was still the odd howler of a turnover, but yeah, he's getting better. His confidence is clearly up. Yeah, he's got better.
Yeah, well, you know how I feel about him.
Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, but I love it. It's really fun to watch him. Really good, very clever with his use of the ball. Nick, we've got to talk about Cochin.
Yeah, he was really good. I don't think it's quite getting into checking his Brownlow odds good, but he's having a really good year.
Yeah, and it was the, I think, best on ground with the coaches' votes.
Again.
Yeah, yeah. All through the sort of the advanced stats, rate Caddy's game far higher, but, you know, whatever. Cochin.
Yeah, that's a three-vote effort for me, I reckon.
Cochin's game is, though, it is, to the eye, you know, that's an answer. Scientific method, it is going back to, you know, 12, 13 levels to me. Like, it's starting to look quite special again.
Dusty's second on the Brownlow betting and Cochin's seventh.
Yeah, I don't like their chances because they're going to take votes off each other.
If steal votes.
Yeah. And overall, Dusty, that's still more 2016 Dusty. Brilliant moments, can't be touched, but not overall dominant.
Yeah, and defensively, didn't play two ways as well as he did sometimes last year, but yeah, still a pretty good game.
Yeah, I don't want to make it. Tackle statistics are not the best indicator. But, yeah, once again, we did get done on the tackle stats, and we had a low number.
Yeah, we were 10-1 on inside 50 tackles, which are a pretty key stat.
Yeah, they are a key stat. And, you know, it's always about outside pressure for us. But still, it's sort of, we were well down on disposals. You know, we got beaten by 75.
Yeah, we're often well down on disposals.
I don't like getting the combination of having less of the ball and less tackles. I don't like, but you know.
Well, we had quite a few more inside 50s, quite a few more intercepts. Like, as long as they're the sign that the game plan's up and running.
Yeah, I agree with that overall. But I think.
Yeah, that only works up to a point.
Yeah, in our premiership run, there's a point: are you winning games on muscle memory, and you know, how much is your, how much is the backbone of your game working if plan A, the outside pressure game, isn't clicking as well as it has been. And, you know, during the premiership run last year, our tackle stats were more healthy than this. But, you know, you can't really complain when you're winning, can you?
Well, there is immediate hope on the horizon. If not this week, then next week. If you want to transition to the VFL?
Just one or two other players. Menindieu was slightly disappointing. I'd like to...
Yeah, he got lost a couple of times on Gresham, badly, unfortunately.
Yeah, so
which made me really sad.
But look, you can't... He's young and he's got athletic upside, you know.
Oh, he does. I just wonder...
You got to take the risk.
Yeah, I just don't think you can play him... I think with Grimes back in the team for Hooley, that if you can give him an easier matchup or play him on the wing.
Yeah.
Because he's great going forward, but yeah, the losing his man in traffic really, really worried me. And good opponent, but yeah. I think he needs to be managed while he learns the role at senior footy.
Yeah, and... But I just see there's upside there, and it's not like the... I don't want to hack in on talking about it every week. Just if you rewatch the second quarter and there's four disposals that Conker does, which just tell you he could cost you a final.
Yeah, well, I think Jack Graham had two disposals at halftime. I mean, we deeply love Premiership hero Jack Graham, and he still worked hard defensively, but... Yeah, that's well below par for a midfielder.
The thing about Jack is that Jack needs to go back. He's been doing this pressure role for too long. He's forgotten how to get the ball. And he needs to go back, and he's got the ability to just get 30 touches. But he's young enough to get better. You know, you have to realise there comes an age where someone goes, you just look at them and go, do you have AFL attributes? Yes, no. If you do, all right, we'll keep you around. If you don't, well, we'll keep you as a backup. But you don't keep someone who you don't really want in your best 22 on your team if he's past 24 or so around, unless you're absolutely desperate. You know, you've got a few injuries. We digress. But I think Menindieu's still in the he could be better than he is camp. That was pretty much all the players I wanted to talk about, other than, yeah, I mean, Nank was his usual awesomeness. And Shedder had a couple of beautiful disposals.
Oh, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, and fantastic. And actually, Nick, bloody Vossi, after the disastrously unsuccessful move to the forward line into first half of 2017, makes it look fantastic in one half in 2018. So there you go.
I hadn't realised, I mean... He hasn't had that. I mean, he's only had around 30 shots at goal, but he's by far the most accurate shot for goal in the team.
Is he? Yeah. I mean, he's a beautiful kick.
Yeah, he's really nice, but he's running at 70%+, which is Tony Lockett territory.
Yeah, well, you know, that, as I said in the commentary, he's not a noted goal kicker. Well, statistically not, but... there won't be a single Richmond player Richmond fan who doesn't know, at least one, Nick Vlosten goal. And that to me is noteworthy. Anyway, VFL.
Definitely. Well, the VFL, playing against Coburg, our former affiliate, and, Coburg.
I'm still hung up on Coburg, by the way.
Well, I'm also sentimental about Coburg because Andy Goodwin's son plays for them and is a enormous monster of a ruckman.
Their star player, yeah.
Yeah. Dan Rioli had a really good first quarter and sort of dropped off a bit after that, but he's not that far away, which is, yeah, that's good news.
Yep.
Marby Atoll had a massive career high of 21 disposals, which I think is at least 6 more disposals than he's ever had in a game before.
Yeah, if he keeps doing that, I'm going to have to reassess my scepticism about him.
I know, he's having a really good year, which, I mean, we've said before, his statistical profile last year was sub-VFL standard, and... Yeah, this is why you have to be patient with the project players. That, you know, sometimes a lot of the time they don't, but sometimes they do come good.
Yeah, I liked him, like, just watching him watch a bit of the game online, and yeah, he did a few nice things.
Mm. Callum Coleman-Jones, who, you know, we mentioned before, we're a fan, had three goals and some big marks. Noah Bolter, flashed again, three goals in the last quarter, 16 disposals.
There's a picture of him on the VFL wrap in the club website. The guy is just disgustingly ripped for a 19-year-old.
Look, and actually I did want to mention that, you know, there has been so much nonsense spoken about Tom Lynch already, but by far my favourite thing that I've read was actually something that was some guy on Big Footy made up about how not only was Tom Lynch's sister now playing for our VFLW team, but that Noah Bolter was dating her, and that Neil Baum was the presiding MC at his sister's 21st birthday.
Do you think all of that's true?
No, only the first bit about his sister playing for the VFLW team.
Still, not one.
That's a great story. Because it's completely believable. He's a really good-looking young man.
It's true, yeah. So he is prematurely receding, so we've always got that on him. My man, Baker, is again, very high possession game. Lots of tackles.
Yeah, won a ton of ball. Apparently, yeah, wasn't, could have occasionally a little bit sloppy in how he used it, but, oh, look, he's tracking very well. And you know that one of, I think, and that while, you know, Tony Greenberg and Rhett Bartlett are clearly the Tiger trivia experts, that my one unique niche is, for some weird reason, I know that the last Richmond player to be named as an emergency for the senior team but not actually play was Justin Paul in 1991.
Okay.
And that means that because Liam Baker was named as an emergency on the weekend, that he is going to play a senior game one day. That makes me happy.
Yeah, nice one. I'm very keen to see him.
He's having a really good season.
And just an salutary lesson about what the standard of the VFL is like. Sam Lloyd was all well with 33 disposals, four goals, and 10 clearances.
Yeah, dominant on ball. Yeah, and Corey Ellis, best on ground.
Yeah, 10 clearances. Yeah. And as you said, Jacob Townsend was quite solid.
Yeah, really good. The VFL teams. Stengel carried a bit of a niggle and was still very good. Yeah, I think selection's interesting. Hopefully Castagna and Grimes come back for you'd expect maybe Hooley. Yeah, who do you think?
Hooley and Graham? Yeah. Because the way the rotations have worked, were one forward down, like just the way they moved it around. You can sort of play Higgins and a few. Higgins would probably be the odd person out who doesn't play so much. But, you know, it would make sense to keep Higgins in the team. But, yeah, we'll see what they do.
Essendon.
Yeah, don't like
it. I think it's cliche to say that I'm really keen to beat them.
Yes, it's a very hot take. sadly, we're all hoping for a night where they were richly humiliated by hundreds of points. They are now playing decently and in with a shot.
I know. So I think it says something about Richmond supporters that in the midst of as reigning premiers and with a 8-2 record. So far, still one of our most popular tweets for the year is when we made fun of David King's prediction of Essendon as premiers.
Yeah, and you know, if I may be frank, you know, a little bit of a cheap shot because you know I don't think David King was anyone's idea of the of a football genius. God bless him. Someone's put it on Twitter that the person most under pressure in the AFL is David King's shirt buttons.
Yeah,
but we digress.
They are annoyingly playing reasonably well.
Yeah, and Jake Stringer, annoyingly, doubly annoyingly, was brilliant against the GWS.
I know.
Kicked a lot of late goals at Venice.
Yeah, and they've thankfully abandoned any pretense that he's a midfielder, which he's not. You know, it's one of these things. I think actually I get annoyed when people compare Jordan Dugowie to Dusty as a midfielder, because Dusty was a prolific ball winner as a junior, and he's been a prolific ball winner from pretty much the day he arrived in the AFL. And Dugowie in his fourth season is approaching the level of possessions that Dusty had in his first season. Like, I just don't think. Look, Gary Ablett Jr. was unusual. He increased the amount of ball he won over quite a long period of time, but generally, you're a big ball winner or you're not, and Stringer's not. And their midfield is a bit thin, and it lacks a bit of grunt. And annoyingly, I think without Prestia, we're not quite as well set up to take advantage of that. But Adam Sard, first in the competition for bounces.
Yeah, he's a good player, Sard.
Yeah, Devon Smith, first in the AFL for tackles. Even without Danaher, they're getting reasonable production out of McKernan, Stewart. They'll have Hurley back this week. Yeah, they're annoying because they've got a chance.
And Happel's been killing the contested ball the last 2 weeks.
Mm.
I do sort of, and I think a friend of the podcast, Ollie Noonan, made this point to us, but this, if you're looking for an extra reason to dislike Anthony Miles, why didn't Essendon chase him last offseason?
Mm.
Like, they could have got him for, I'm sure we probably would have given him for nothing. And
pretty God, close to nothing, yeah.
God, this team needs. Like, imagine if this team had like one or two extra competent mids, you know.
Well, and two-way mids. They're pretty. That was one of the. One of the great moments of Dreamtime last year was that Trent Cotchin couldn't get Dyson Heppel's shirt on because his chest was too big. Like, we have bigger body midfielders than they do, but yeah, they get momentum on. They've got a bit of pace. McDonald Tipanui actually has a really good statistical profile. I just don't rate him because he's never played well against Richmond.
Yeah, that is true. And I've seen him. It seems like the last five Bombers games I've watched, they've lost badly. And yeah. What's the line?
No, 20 points.
What do you think?
Well, 2 weeks ago, it was actually 32 points, and I was feeling relaxed and comfortable and smug. But that's within the stress zone for me, and it's going to be a big game, and they're going to be fired up. And I'm worried.
There's a question about Jack, isn't there? Like, all the noise is good, but he's had multiple concussions, and they often...
He has had multiple concussions that he didn't... I was encouraged that he didn't show any sensitivity to light afterwards, which is a big problem for guys who've had concussions. So hopefully, I was hoping that was a sign of.
I'm impressed with your neurological knowledge.
I just read. I can't remember the Crows key position player had to retire due to concussions, but I just remember really clearly he said that he couldn't be in a room with bright lights for 6 months after his last concussion. Like, it was a major issue.
Yeah, and look, bottom line is, Jack is actually absolutely central. Hooley, great player, replaceable.
Yeah. Yeah, look, we already had bought Brandon Ellis back in the team. You just get Grimes back and everyone shuffles around. And
yeah, I mean, fine. And the introduction of Short has given us an alternative number one backline distributor. And Brander, he's not perfect. Like, I actually felt a bit on the weekend, like, it was almost like he was the rookie list player and Short was the first round draft pick. But he's pretty solid. I mean, he's if he's your backup halfback flanker, you're in pretty good nick.
Yeah, you're doing okay. Yeah, look, 20 points favourites says we should win, and I hope we do. They've played up, which is annoyingly. Like, they've beaten the Cats, the Giants, the Power, and the Crows. Like, they're not a bad foursome.
No, and the last 2 weeks have been legitimately good. So, we'll see. I either want a really close game or an absolute shellacking, but I'm very excited. We'll be there and looking forward to it.
Yeah, look, I want to beat them really badly and make them look bad in front of a gigantic crowd.
Mm. Well, the nice thing is if we do that, because they've won the last 2 weeks, there'll actually be some Essendon supporters there, because it looked like it'd only be Richmond only crowd until 2 weeks ago.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.